I want to welcome you to the April HPV QI 2018 call. And just a couple of housekeeping things, of course, if you are going to have sounds in your background, you may want to mute yourself so that we don't get any reverberation on the call for the rest of us. And we will sometimes ask for participation, and we really do want to have discussions at times about the things that are going on and what's worked and what hasn't and those types of things as we proceed. Just make note of next month's call, which will be on the first Tuesday, as always. It's actually May 1st, and that's going to sneak up on us because everything that happens on the first or the second of the month that's recurring sneaks up on us. So make sure you put that in your calendar and note that you will have entered charts by the day before. And then just as the one anomaly that we have in June, our call is on the second Tuesday of the month. Thank you for entering your charts and working with us. We always tend to have some hiccups on the first month as all the permissions are given. And so I think we're set on that. Thank you for persevering through that and working on the sandwich messaging that we noted for last month. So I'm going to turn the time over to Dr. Cosgrove. We are switching up our order today to accommodate the folks that are joining us. And so we're going to turn the time over to him. And
all right. Good morning. And good morning, Utah. And good morning, Wyoming. And good morning, Alaska. thanks for joining us. What I'd like to talk about today is, first of all, I kind of want to have us just do a little bit of reflection and talk and think to ourselves about our own groups and what we managed to accomplish this last month. Last month, what I challenged you to do was to just put HPV in the sandwich of Tdap, HPV, and Menactra, and just do it matter-of-factly, like, yep, this is what we always do, and kind of hiding the HPV in the middle of the pack so that we don't stumble into, well, we're going to do the Tdap and the Menactra, then we have to think about and talk about this other thing. So we try to keep it the same. The message there is just, we're trying to normalize the HPV vaccine. And so that was your challenge for the last month. And what I'd like to do is have people talk about what their progress is or what they found or what they learned or what mistakes they made or what successes they had. So anybody who's awake enough to talk, would you please unmute your microphone and tell us what you've learned?
So this is Dr. Johnson. I did that, and I was surprised at how easy it was. I did have one person that I had to stop and have a conversation with, but most of the rest of them didn't even bat an eye. We just went through it, and that was it, and didn't have to really go into any further detail at all about it.
That's what the research that's done throughout the country in the CDC's recommendation is, simply that. You just do it matter-of-factly, like, yeah, this is what we do every day. And if you don't make a big deal out of it, most of the patients don't. Then when those few that do, then you've got that other set of skills to motivational interviewing and cajoling and data and all of that other stuff that we do. But the simplest thing is just do it matter-of-fact. So your experience confirms what the CDC has been telling us. Anybody else? Well, that's a lot of silence. Okay. So we gleaned all of the information we can, I guess, out of that first month's work. So now what I'm going to switch gears and talk about QI, and then I will get back to a challenge about messaging in a few minutes. As you've gone through, PDSA cycles with your team. And again, I challenge you to just have lots of little, huddles with your team, random times during the day or scheduled times. But frequent little conversations are how quality is improved. But you've already figured out that working through the PDSA cycles, if you try to do it in that structured way, it just feels messy and awkward and ugly. And, we docs are perfectionists. So when we try something and it fails, or we try something and it seems to be awkward and messy, our first thing is, well, screw this. I think I'll get back to what I used to do. And what I would encourage you to work through is push through that, because this improvement stuff is supposed to be awkward and messy. And it's time to celebrate your mistakes, celebrate the awkwardness, celebrate the messiness of it, because the fact that it's uncomfortable means that you're up against your own envelope, your own comfort zone, and that you're trying, if it's awkward, it means you're trying something new. And that's kind of what this is all about, trying something new. The other part of the messiness is that you can't do this alone, so you have to include the other people on your team. And guess what? They never think exactly like you do. They never want to do exactly what you want to do. And so then you get into the other awkwardness and messiness of negotiation, of trying to have a consistent message throughout your team means that you got to get all of your team members on board to one little effort, one little message. So that also is awkward. And that again is learning. That again is gets us out of our comfort zone of how do we use our team members? How do we honor what the knowledge that they bring? And for the pediatricians in the group, what I would suggest is your MA knows a hell of a lot more about your patients than you do. So trust them, trust their instincts, and give it a try. This is a trial and error kind of thing, and you can't learn unless you're, you know, quite willing and anxious to get out there and make those mistakes. I think at the first conference, I talked about navigating. So if you wanted to fly, say, from San Francisco to Hawaii, and you spent a week trying to calculate the exact best direction, and you got it down to a tenth of a degree on the compass, and you set off from San Francisco and aim for Hawaii, you would never get there. You would just, you know, run out of gas and drown in the ocean, because guess what? There's a little bit of breeze. As soon as you're, you know, 10 miles off the coast, you will have been blown half a mile off course. And, you know, another breeze might have put you back on course. But the thing is, you can't get there unless you are willing to keep checking where you are, and keep doing course corrections. And that's what quality improvement is all about, is being willing to keep tweaking it and keep looking for course corrections, which means you have to stop and figure out where you are, which is why we have to put data down on a piece of paper or on a sticky note or into the key data computer thing. But essentially, it's just to say, what have we done? Where are we now? And where do we want to go next? And it's all about course correction. So as far as your goal for this next month, as far as quality improvement, what I would suggest is that I would suggest you have daily little huddles, 2 minutes here, but, you know, when you're waiting for a patient to get, you know, in the room, chat about what did we learn yesterday? What did we learn today? What did it feel right? Or what felt wrong? What did your MA hear any of the patients talking about, well, that was a different thing, or was there any discomfort from your staff? Or did you feel discomfort? Putting all of that out in the open just gives you a clearer way to think about it. You know, we all, I think, clarify our own ideas best if we do it out loud with a good listener. And your staff will talk better if you at least fake being a good listener. So that's the challenge on the QI side. And that is try to have more huddles, more little tiny course corrections. I still want you to do the awkwardness of writing it down as a plan and then do something, and then the PDSA cycle, and just sort of do that on a piece of paper on a whiteboard. But essentially, but don't just do that. Do a bunch of little tiny course corrections. All right. Now I'm going to shift gears and talk about the messaging. You've just discovered that just being matter of fact about it, just putting the HPV in the middle of the sandwich kind of gets the job done for a lot of your patients. Most of them don't need a whole lot of information. Most of them don't need a whole lot of motivation or cajoling. Most of them just need to know what you think because they already respect you. That's why they came in to see you. They, you know, if they didn't trust you, they would have gone to that cuter doctor down the block. So that simply works. Now, it doesn't work with everybody. And so then we have to say, okay, what's another thing that we can add to the mix? What CDC recommends is that we carefully not talk about sexual activity with your 11-year-old patients, but talk about cancer. And I've tried that on and off for the last 11 years, and I have mixed results in my own delivery. So let me talk about that. It looks to us like, to healthcare providers, that we are trying to prevent cancer. And in fact, that's what we are. We, you know, essentially the numbers are 1 out of 160 of your teens are going to get an HPV-related cancer if we don't do something. And so it is about preventing cancer. However, in terms of trying to induce somebody into getting a shot, one of the issues that's right on the table is fear. So they come in and they're a little fearful about something, and then you say the C word, the cancer word. And what I found is that some of the time, and it feels like it's about half of the time, that sets a family back. And, you know, the if you watch their face, if you watch their expression, if you watch their eyes, you realize just saying cancer elicits fear. Well, that's troublesome, because the other thing you already know is that as soon as somebody's feeling fear, they shut down their inputs. They shut down their awareness of the situation. They hone down to tunnel vision and they can't hear what you say. So if you frighten them, you've lost your audience. And so somehow we have to say prevent cancer without scaring about the cancer word. And what I'm going to suggest, I'm going to challenge you, as I mentioned, my own success rate is low on this, using this technique, but this is what the CDC and focus groups have said, is that you talk about it as, yep, we've now got this vaccine that will help prevent cancer for your child. And then just watch. And if you frighten them, okay, if you get the sense that what you just said pushes them back in the chair a little bit, makes them look off to the side, seeking help somewhere. If you get the sense that you've just increased the fear level in the room, then address it. Fear is one of those things that is always present a little bit, but if it gets too much, it gets in the way of the conversation. So what I would suggest is try out the prevent cancer verbiage, use that, but be aware when you say it of how the mom reacts. And if you sense that she is just became 10% more frightened, call attention to it and say, oh, I see by your face that just the word cancer frightens you. Tell me, has there been cancer? Do you have some experience with cancer? Has there been cancer in your family? Partly, if you identify the fear, honor it, even celebrate it. And again, we talked about fear as the alarm bell on your priority list. So if the mom is feeling fear, it means that she is feeling threatened about something that's high importance to her. That's her child. But if you can identify it and talk about it, then you can diffuse it. Then you can get back to using that fear as a motivator. Now, fear is a motivator to a lot of people, but fear shuts down a lot of people. And so I'm saying this is a two-edged sword here. You can gain a lot of compliance by using fear, or you can disrupt compliance by using fear. So I'm going to suggest that this next month that you all use prevent cancer in your language, but be very careful. I think some of you'll find that it worsens some of the situations and improves some of the situations, and you're going to have to feel your way through it. But I do want you to pay attention to the fear issue when you use those words. Now, anybody have any questions for me? Well, looky there. Quality improvement, and I hit perfection on the first bounce. Otherwise, somebody would have given me a course correction. Now, I'm going to turn the microphone back to Elise.
All right. Thank you for that information.
Good morning, Elisa. This is Laura.
And then I do know we have Diane Ogborn on. Are we good to go, Diane?
Yeah, this is Diane. Sorry, I just had another incoming call that I had to cancel.
Very good. Laura and Diane, go ahead.
Great. So Diane, I'm first going to introduce her a little bit. Diane is a woman, daughter, mother, sister, wife, and grandmother. She gives service by ministering with teenage girls at her local church and providing medications to patients at a free clinic in Haiti. Diane's a pharmacist and a teacher by training. Diane has family members who have been greatly impacted by cervical cancer, opioid abuse, pertussis, and hepatitis C. And she's an advocate for preventing disease through the HPV, Tdap, and other vaccinations. So we're really grateful to have her join us today as our HPV advocate. So thank you so much, Diane, for being here.
I'm pleased to be here.
So we just want to ask you a few questions about just the impact that HPV has had in your life and your family's life. I know that it was your sister who had HPV. I was wondering if you could tell us what you remember about your sister growing up.
My sister Laura was just 2 years older than me, and so we went to school together and shared a room, and she was liked by a lot of people and was very hardworking, and she was a good friend to a lot of people.
And can you tell us what you remember about her experience with cervical cancer?
I'm from a family of 10 children. I grew up in Utah, and I didn't remember a whole lot about my sister's experience with cervical cancer. She and I as adults weren't close from different things. I did ask my sisters and my mother what they remember about Laura having cervical cancer. And my younger sister had said that Laura had a hysterectomy for treatment of cervical cancer. And she thought Laura also had some lymph nodes removed around her genitals because she had a lot of swelling down there in her left leg and in her labia and somewhat disfiguring. And my other sister said that it was a radical hysterectomy that Laura had. And my baby sister said she remembered that Laura had to cath herself because she needed to retrain her bladder to pee after her radiation. And I remember Laura being in pain from the radiation and the surgery that she had.
So that kind of goes into my next question about the medical treatments that she received. Do you know how long she was going through these treatments for?
It was over the course of a couple of years that she had surgery and radiation, and then the pain persisted after that. And so did the lymphatic swelling in her labia and in her leg.
And how did the loss of your sister impact your family?
So my sister didn't die from cervical cancer. She ended up dying from an opioid overdose, which could have been impacted by the pain that she dealt with from the treatment for the cervical cancer. We've all dealt with the loss of her in different ways, and I think also the memory of looking back and wondering how we could have helped her differently and been more of a support. Neither my mom nor any of my sisters or I were particularly empathetic and helpful to my sister to a great degree as she went through her cancer treatment quite a bit alone and not with a lot of support from her husband either.
So how would you say that this experience maybe impacted how you feel about the HPV vaccine today?
Well, my mother was a vaccinator. She knew people who had polio, and she knew I had quit breathing as a child from pertussis. And so my mother got all of us children vaccinated. And so I'm really positive she would have gotten all of us the HPV vaccine if it had been a vaccine available in our childhood. And I'm very much a proponent that we can't know what everybody will do in their lives, but we can provide and recommend the HPV vaccination to save other families and other individuals from going through the struggles and the pain and the loss from HPV-related cancers.
Great. So are there any other related messages you would like to share with pediatricians and healthcare teams regarding cervical cancer prevention and HPV vaccination in general?
Just recommend it. Physicians have so much of an influence on parents and patients, and a lot of parents just don't know. They don't know, and they're afraid to do harm to their children. And there's a lot of disinformation and false claims out there. And so a strong recommendation from a physician. I remember my physician recommending waiting for the chickenpox vaccine when my children were little, because he said it was newer. We don't really know how long the protection will last. And so he recommended against it. And then years later, waffled still. And so that was the lead that I took and followed his lead. So I believe there are a lot of parents that will follow their pediatrician's lead.
Well, thank you so much, Diane, for taking the time to share your important story and message with the group.
You're welcome. And I'm open to any further questions from the group or through email if someone has an additional question.
Diane, this is Bill. When I've heard you talk before, you talked about the fact that this was sort of secret in your family, that your sister didn't share much with the rest of you, and that could you talk a little bit about the isolation?
We didn't all go on a 5K run for my sister when she had cervical cancer. We didn't sit around the kitchen table and talk with her about how we could help her and how she was feeling and what her treatment was. We just went on with our lives, and we didn't talk to her about it, and she didn't come to us to really share her concerns and her worries and her fears. And so we really left her out on this ice floe to struggle through this cancer herself. And so it was suffering and pain and worry that she went through by herself, and we didn't offer help, and she didn't come to us for help, and we all just accepted it that way.
Thank you. I'm going to make a comment. One of the issues about HPV is because there's a sexual connection, because it's a sexually transmitted disease, there is a stigma and a silence and an isolation. And as your sister was stuck on that ice floe all by herself, because the illness itself seems to be shameful. And that's the other part we need to kind of work on as a community. We have to kind of, this is just a cancer that's from an infection, and that we need to lift the stigma, because the cancers are very isolating. One in five women are going to have an abnormal pap smear. And that's another thing that they don't talk about to each other. They don't talk about it to their sisters or their mothers or their best friends. They tend to carry this burden alone, in isolation and sort of shame. And it's just a virus. It's a cancer caused by a virus. We have to kind of get rid of the shame and the isolation, because the victims are doubly victimized by the isolation and the silence. Now I'll get off my soapbox.
You know, one of the comments that my one of the five sisters said was a text message that said, "Well, I'd say it was definitely sexually transmitted," with a lot of inflection in it that it was kind of her fault, and I think that that stigma there and that blaming part that, well, if you just done differently, you wouldn't have gotten this cancer, and we can't treat it that way. We can't blame the person that gets cancer.
Plus the fact that 8 out of 10 of adults are going to catch these HPV infections. It's all of us, except for that lucky 20% who somehow managed to miss it. So that it makes no sense to shroud this in shame. And we as a community have to kind of lift that shame. So part of our jobs as pediatricians are to educate people about the fact that this is all of us, this is everybody, this is normal to catch this infection. This infection causes cancer. We can prevent it. And so that's why we're doing this work, why we're doing those darn PDSA cycles. This is why we're trying to improve our messaging. Again, for most of our three states, we're hitting a little bit at or near 50% of our kids are getting immunized, which means 50% aren't. So we've got a lot of work to do.
Laura or Deanna, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, I appreciate Diane sharing her story, and I hope that the people on the call can really take that and move forward with their quality improvement project.
Perfect. Thank you.
And this is Deanna. And for those of you who are in Salt Lake, or even those of you who are in other states, we have HPV advocates that we can connect with your practice, either through like a web platform or a teleconference, to share these stories with your healthcare team. We think that would be beneficial to help prioritize this vaccine in a pediatric setting where you seldom encounter these types of cancers.
In the recap email, I will give you Deanna's email so you can contact her if you would be interested in a local or an advocate in your state. Dr. Cosgrove wants me to mention that as part of your huddles, to share Diane's sister's story with the team so that everybody's seeing the effects of the shame and how family members feel when one family is struggling with the virus and the infection and cancers. All right. I want to thank you again for joining us today. We are going to end early. And just a reminder for those that weren't on before when I mentioned this, that our next call will be on Tuesday, May 1st. As always, make sure that you have signed in so that I can make sure to give credit to those that have participated and share this information in huddles frequently and make course corrections over the course of the month using the cancer prevention model. And just another exciting news, I have mock-ups of artwork for posters and cards and tabletop displays that are looking really fantastic. And those supplies I will be sending to each of your practices used to the benefit of the work you're doing. So watch for those in the next month or so. And again, thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you in May.